Pardon?
I'll go to Europe for you.
No, trust me, it's not as much as all the crazy. All right, who else joined us?
Bill and Dale from NIAAA.
Hey, Bill and Dale from NIAAA.
Hi, Ed.
New Mexico.
I had lunch with your boss yesterday.
Did you put in a good word for us?
I did.
Okay.
He said you'll have a great time over at NICHD. All right, so...
Hey, Ed?
Yeah?
This is Bill again.
Bill?
I have to go give a lecture at 3, so I... And it's way across campus, so I'll only be on until about 2:30.
Hey, you know, you submitted that paper at the wrong time because they called me and said they wanted me to do it in a week.
Which paper?
And I'm leaving to go to Europe, so I couldn't do it.
Which one?
Drug and alcohol dependence.
Why'd they want it in a week? They've had it for about 3 or 4 weeks at least.
Oh, I just got a message the other day, and I said I'm leaving Saturday. I said if you can wait, then I'll get to. I haven't heard back from them.
Yeah, I can sure wait.
All right, I kind of figured, but we'll see what the editor says. But I made a suggestion that under no circumstances should someone else review it. And you know who it is.
Yeah, you bet. I put that in bold letters myself.
All right. All right. On, is Michael on, Charnas? Andy Hull? Carl? No. Claire? Claudia is flying. She's not going to be on. Elizabeth Moore's barely on. Elizabeth Sal's not going to be. Jennifer's not going to be on. Catherine Narr is not on. Ken Jones is not going to be on. And Phil's here. Sarah's here. Suzanne's here. And someone else is here. Nope.
I'm here. It's Tatiana. I'm sorry.
Tatiana, how are you?
What does that mean? I'm good.
Well, you've been writing a lot of emails.
I work from home on Fridays, and I am so productive.
It is unbelievable. I mean, you're now getting close to half of what Jill sends me in a day. So.
Well, you know, maybe next Friday I could surpass her.
That's
no,
good.
I'm flying back from London on Thursday night, and I'll have enough emails to deal with.
Rather than having your inbox filled by me.
Oh, well, I got this email the other day from the university saying that I had overused my allocation of space.
Ooh.
It's because I've been gone. I just haven't been in my office, and they don't go off the mainframe until after I download them from my office computer. So I was running up some stuff. All right, so let's get this show on the road so I can go pack my clothes and get out of here.
Okay.
We have a few items today. I just came back from the first European FASD meeting, and in conjunction with that, there was a World Health Organization to a planning meeting for an international collaboration on FASD. And the World Health Organization and their global initiative on alcohol has decided that they are going to target FASD, particularly in developing countries, as a high-priority research area. And they are seeking funds to do this from the UN as well as from some private donors. And it was a very good meeting. And they had people from all over the world, Korea, South America, India, Reunion Islands, Europe. And so they want to try to do this in a big way. And one of the things that they're doing is looking over our forms and the way that we collect the data, some of the types of things that we are doing. And it's going to be a multi-tiered approach where countries, depending upon how much they can afford to do, will do different things. So imaging may not be except in a few countries, but dysmorphology exams, and Ken's not on the thing, but they may want to try to have Ken or someone from the consortium Dysmorphology Corps trained dysmorphologists or pediatricians in other countries on how to recognize this. They looked at our forms for how we make our diagnosis. They got some information on the behavioral testing that we're doing. And it's not that each country will do everything the same or do everything equivalent, but that they're going to try to provide a basic program for all countries to do. And I think that CFAS will be involved in technical support for some of that, and then decide what else can be done depending upon the amount of money they can raise and the amount of money that any particular country is willing to put into this project. So I thought that was pretty good, and it might get similar data to what we're collecting done in a number of other countries, and particularly if Ken can train them, that would provide an avenue for us to have access to more children who have complete diagnosis. And so I thought it was a good meeting. Ken Warren was there and Peggy was there, and they were both excited about the outcomes. And then the European group, this was their first meeting, and it was both scientist and parent groups, and they are now starting to get things moving there. And so it was 2 days of kind of presentations, primarily by Europeans, some Canadians, and they may also look for us for some types of technical support in their European projects. And they appear to be getting funding from the French government, and there's an INSERM project, so there's a collaboration between NIAAA and INSERM, so hopefully that may also lead to additional access or additional technical support provided by CFAS. So are there any questions on what may or may not come out of that?
Ed, this is Bill. Do you think there's opportunities for us to also look to other groups doing FAS research and see if there's a way to kind of pull their data into, I don't necessarily one central area, but at least one place where it can be managed and available?
You know, that's a possibility. For the Europeans, everything's going to be under the Europe control, and they are not going to be putting their data into our database. For the World Health Organization, they do this under a contract, and the guy's a Canadian, and he's done numerous trials for them. And he sounded like he was setting up, after the study is designed, that then he is going to set up a database for the central collection of all of their data. So I don't think it's going to involve having, not that we wouldn't be able to get access to that data, but I don't think we're going to be responsible for that.
Okay.
Any other issues about that, either the European FASD group or the World Health Organization meeting? Okay, other international things, there's a possibility that some funds may be going to South Africa to fund a fetal alcohol project. We are talking to people in South Africa, young investigators, trying to identify young investigators who might be able to access this private money, which is going to be targeted for South Africa. But also, we were talking about the imaging people in South Africa as one possibility. And so we'll know more about that come January, the end of January.
Is that the TK initiative?
This is something that TK started with SAB Miller.
Right. He called me on it today. I mean, yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll have to see what happens with that. But the money would be farmed through ABMRF. And they're trying to identify young people there who could apply for grants, and a senior investigator. And the one I recommended was Dan Stein, who could sit on the ABMRF board. This seems like it's going to be a longer-term commitment from SAB Miller, so that's one possibility for increased funding. too bad Michael's on, not on. I don't think he is. But I haven't heard very much about the merger, what's going on with that, except that probably within the next 2 weeks, a report will be sent to Francis Collins for his consideration. There's a number of steps that are still being taken to try to block the potential formation of a new addictions institute or the merger of NIAAA and NIDA, which would leave us in some unknown position of whether we would go to NICHD or whether they would just keep all the portfolios together. Dale, Bill, you have any insights into that? Or?
No, nothing new. I think the next step is what you said for that report to be delivered to Francis Collins, and I haven't heard that it has been yet. I think it hasn't.
All right. I can also say, I think, that then, again, Bill and Dale, you might have more information, is that regardless of what happens to the possibility of a merger or a new institute, things at NIAAA do not look as good as they used to look in terms of funding new proposals.
Wow.
And we will be a new proposal next year. So we're going to have to really put on our best show, I think, in order to make this a very competitive application, because from what I understand, the funding percentiles are going to drop significantly.
Yeah, I think we're experiencing our first contraction of the budget. It's been hard enough having a flat budget in the past decade, but I think it's being contracted by, a couple percent or something like that?
Yeah, I think I heard, though, that besides the contraction, because there was a mandate last year to fund a certain number of new proposals, that there's now a greater than normal commitment for future years out of that budget. And so there will be less money for new applications or competitive applications.
Yeah, I don't know about that. By new, do you mean new investigator?
No.
No, just mean new RO1s. Or...
New RO1s competitive renewals.
Yeah, so I guess if you don't get your grant funded, or if one doesn't get their grant funded, then they turn around and submit a new one.
Well, I think anyone who's going to throw in a grant. You know, normally the funding level's in the 20th percentile or so around there, right? And I hear it's going to drop well below that because they have a large number of continuations.
It almost sounds like a disincentive to sustain a program. Hopefully it's not that extreme.
So, I would assume that there will be some budgetary constraints in a renewal and that they are going to be looking hard and fast at ways to try to save some money. So I hope I can provide a little impetus for people to try to start analyzing and getting the data out and answering those questions that we put forth back in the January meeting last year. All right. Jill, you want to tell us about the winter meeting details? I think you've got
I'm able to say now that we're going to be staying, the sleeping rooms will be at the Hilton Rockville. The meeting will actually be at NIAAA. I'm working on the contract right now with Hilton Rockville, but I have been able to get a rate of $120 a night, which is really nice.
That's a very good rate at that hotel because I think when the government meets there, they pay about $220.
Wow. Yep, that's about right. I just kept saying, well, then we'll go to North Carolina. So we worked that out. And just to review, the meeting is going to be in Rockville. And the first day is going to be on Monday, January 31st. And starting at 1 p.m. for the basic science group only. So the clinical group will be meeting full day on Tuesday the 1st. So most of you will likely fly in on the 31st. And then Wednesday, February 2nd from 9 to 3 is going to be the clinical and possible clinical and past meeting day. So that's what the schedule is. If anyone has any questions, you can definitely let me know. I got everyone's poll about when they needed rooms, and I'll be sending out instructions on how to book those rooms, hopefully by the end of next week, if not the beginning part of the week after that.
Okay.
So that's the meeting update.
Jill, I thought that, and maybe I've been away for a while, but I thought the meeting, the first day of the meeting was going to be a joint meeting as well.
Nope.
That was the second day.
The first day of the meeting is just basic science, just for the afternoon. You and...
So the clinical people are never going to meet by themselves?
Yes. The clinical people will be meeting by themselves part of the day on Wednesday, February 2nd. We just don't know which part of the day that's going to be and which part's going to be joint CFASD and PASS.
All right, well, it's going to be kind of a rush day because don't we finish by 3?
You do. You finish by 3.
Is that your recollection, Dale?
I don't have it in front of me. I think the idea was to allow CFAS folks to get out of town if they could.
Right.
So maybe it would be... you know, it could be 8 or 9 in the morning to, you know, noonish, being solely CFAS clinical.
And yeah, I mean,
maybe
I'd,
a few hours after that for a joint meeting. It depends on how much overlap you want to have with PASS.
Well, I think that would be worthwhile. And, you know, we went to a lot of trouble to arrange it, so I'd hate to just cut it off at a couple hours. Mm-hmm. So... What does the clinical group think about meeting alongside the basic science group on the first day beginning at 1 o'clock on the 1st?
Will we be in a different room?
No.
Oh, she just means do it as one big joint meeting?
Just do it as one big joint meeting.
I think
and
that's right.
That would give us 5 hours, you know, on that day to meet together, and then we could meet again Wednesday morning for a couple hours and then meet with PASS from like 10 to 3.
So is that then, we're meeting on the 31st, just to be clear, are we going out the 30th then? Is that what you're saying? Or are we
No. You'd be flying on the 31st.
And then coming in for the 2nd, okay.
Or from you, I mean, since we don't start till 1 o'clock on the 1st.
Ed, hold on. This is Jill. So you, right now how it is you've got Monday being basic science from 1 to 6.
Right.
Tuesday being a full day of CFASD. But basic science and clinical together all day on the 1st.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm sorry. Then I had my...
And
okay.
The 2nd is the past day?
And then the 2nd is clinical has their own section, time period, and clinical and PASS.
Oh, okay. All right. I got
okay,
it.
Half a day of each. Is that what you mean?
We're keeping the schedule the way it was. Ed just got confused a little bit.
I got confused because I thought it was described as a 2-day meeting rather than a 3-day meeting. But we're good.
Ed, it's Michael. I just came on late. I'm sorry. I'll be here the rest of the time.
All righty. Well, the only thing that I was asking for you for right at the beginning, I talked about the World Health Organization meeting in Holland, and it was in a monastery, and my room was one of the old cells of the monks. So it was very sparse. But... I was wondering if you had any insights into any additions on the merger or the new institute forming or the budgets at NIH.
Let's start with the budgets. Is Dale on?
Yeah.
So my understanding is that some time ago the institute directors were all asked to come up with a budget scenario for a 5% cut. And... the discussion, at least by the incoming Republican House, is that they want to cut all federal agencies except perhaps Defense, Homeland Security, and perhaps VA, although they really haven't squared this around. So in terms of NIH budgets, they may be looking at a reduction rather than even a flat line with a sort of real dollars reduction because of inflation, small as it is, inflation is still there and real. In terms of the process, I understand that the SMRB has now sent its formal recommendation to Francis Collins, but he hasn't commented on it, or at least it was going to be sent within a week of sometime this week. So that part is nearing its conclusion as well. How long he will deliberate upon it is not certain. There's been an awful lot of activity on the outside, and now something of a hue and cry from tobacco-free kids and some of the other groups who are becoming very concerned about moving the tobacco portfolio out of NCI and what will happen to that. One of the arguments that's beginning to be made is that if NIH is really looking at a budget cut, how do you do a merger which costs money and not at some level compromise the budget for the programs that are going to be within the portfolio of a new or reorganized institute? And that too needs to be addressed. I think it has been fairly quiet otherwise because people have been waiting for the SMRB report. There were some articles in journals with rebuttals and rebuttals to rebuttals that are being written. They, I think, are not going to play a central role in anything that happens going forward. They're part of the background noise now of the discussion and debate.
All right. Well, just, I guess, a wait and see. And the only thing I heard was that funding line was going to be a lot lower than it has been in the past, given commitments on continuations, and there's a large number of those, more than normal.
Yeah.
And they know they're going to take a budget hit.
Yeah.
So things are not looking good. So I was trying to pump everybody up to start pumping out some papers and show the value of this consortium.
Yeah.
Then we discussed the CFAS winter meeting, and hopefully you heard some of that, but we're on for that Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. We're going to start the basic science program at 1 o'clock on Monday, so you'll be able to fly down in the morning. And that's about it so far. The progress reports, so that we can have them prepared and distributed for the meeting, are due by January 3rd. And Jill sent out a kind of format template and how we would like to see it done. And these have proved very valuable in the past, I think, for everyone to see what's going on and what people are finding. And they're available online so that they're always there as a refresher. And then the other thing is that the RSA deadline for symposium submissions, December 6th, the only person that I've heard from, and I was in Brussels, and I apologize to Michael for not responding sooner, was Michael, who's thinking of putting in another one, and I hope he's still thinking of doing that.
So I wanted to just raise it on this one, because on this call, because it's one that would come largely from the clinical side, and we were kind of reflecting on, we've had two CFAS symposia in the last year. There aren't that many topics that would be fresh, but one which hasn't been done has to do with all of the facial work, the facial dysmorphology. So one possible symposium that we talked about on the basic science meeting call was perhaps to have one on CFAS and dysmorphology. And those of you who hear your names, we haven't consulted anybody. We were just throwing ideas out, and you'll have to tell us if this sounds interesting. And one concept would be maybe Ken Jones doing an overview and diagnostic challenges, and then someone doing something from the basic science facial dysmorphology. It came up in light of Tim Cudd reporting on some of his stuff. We had Feng Zhou do his at the last year's RSA, and then possibly having Peter Hammond and maybe Tatiana Farood present what they've been doing to sort of join together a symposium that begins with the challenges that Ken Jones could throw out as a clinician who looks at dysmorphology, and then take it again from animal models to the work that's being done in humans. And I'd be curious whether people think this is something they would like to do, or whether there are variations on this that might even be better.
It's actually what I would have suggested. I think you want to, I think we've had a huge push, Tatiana, to get images to Peter Hammond. And so I think our goal has been to have them all ready for the January meeting. So I agree this is about a month ahead, but I think these are general enough, and I think he's looked at enough data already that I think he could prepare, I think, kind of an overview of what this would look like. And so I'm not I think that would actually work out very well. I think from what we're doing, I think there's actually potentially a couple different directions that we could go. And I say from the IU area. So we actually have analyses that are ongoing doing a direct comparison, with Susan Astley. And, and this is a little more controversial. I'm not sure I would propose this for this session. That will more identify some of the limitations of what's currently existing, and I would not want to build something around that because I think that's too confrontational. But Lisa's been doing a lot of work in terms of, the lift measurements, and we've been doing some comparisons looking. Now, this is with the Jacobson data in a little bit more detail, but hopefully we're going to have enough from the other data sets that we can do more of a comparison, looking much more focused now on just alcohol exposed rather than focusing on FAS and looking at different predictors in the face. So I actually think we could take what was a poster, if that's all right, at last year's session, expand that now to the full sample, and then also compare it to the U.S. I mean, don't you think that would be pretty reasonable, Lee? I think we're going to have enough for the push we're doing, that we would definitely have it for June, and I think we could give enough of a hint for a December.
Definitely.
Do you agree?
So what's really great about that is it ties nicely to the first talk of Ken Jones. Ken, are you on?
No, he's not available today. And the problem is that the teratology meeting is June 26th through the 30th.
I see.
And the RSA meeting is June 25th to the 29th.
Same place, maybe?
No, one's in Kentucky and one's in Atlanta.
So, Tatiana, it sounds like your group might have two talks.
I mean, there could be. There could be, I guess. I always like to have an embarrassment of riches and give one dynamite talk, so I'm not necessarily arguing for two because I think you really want Peter Hammond.
So maybe what would work is to have two from your group, including one that addresses more directly the clinical issue, the Astley comparison that you just described, and another that presents work that's not been presented in RSA Symposium, to my knowledge, about the general approach that you've been taking with the 3D camera and what you've been learning. And then there's Peter Hammond's talk, which is three, and we could have a fourth talk even if Ken can't do it.
Sarah's been looking at some data between the comparisons between the different diagnostic schemes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether Sarah wants to say anything, whether you think that would be ready for prime time or not.
Well, at this point it isn't, but certainly by then it could be. I mean, I can just briefly what I did, it was brought up on the call last time when I wasn't there, but I just looked at a comparison of the HOIMI scheme with the CFAS scheme, but I did a very gross comparison, and I think there's a lot more detail, especially incorporating behavior, that could, I think, lead to something really interesting. What I don't know is it interesting to anyone but me?
And is it likely to be the case that Gene Hoimy, as well as Ken and Luther and all the people who have done dysmorphology for us, are going to be at teratology?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I don't know how strong the animal data are, and it may be, that I'll have to talk to Fung and also to Tim to see exactly what they have, because that would be the likely lead. But it's conceivable that we could just introduce the challenge in sort of 3 minutes rather than having a full talk, and then let those four talks be the symposium.
Okay.
I really like that first talk, though. I think it really sets the stage. I don't know what you think.
I would love to have Ken Jones do it. Where is teratology going to be?
Well, I'm looking to see now about the flight schedules between Louisville, Kentucky, and...
They're not that far away.
So let's say for June 27th and go in the morning and come back in the afternoon. And let's see if you can do that or not. we'll know in a minute.
It would be ideal. I agree.
They have and he own talk.
The clinical problem because he would do a great job, and he would really set the stage for the other talks. And I'd be happy to have just all human work too. We don't have to do the animal stuff because we've done it in the last two CFAS symposia, and to have two from the IU group, Peter Hammonds and Sarah. I think that would be a dynamite symposium.
It's a 1 hour and 20 minute flight on Delta, and they have flights that look like they leave at about every hour and a half in the morning anyway. So it's definitely doable. Yeah, I mean, it's an hour. They have several nonstops for 1.5 hours. Now, whether Ken will agree to that or not, I don't know. But I would talk to him, but I won't be around the rest of the week, so I won't be back till next week. So
we have until December 6th.
All right, well, I'll talk to him when I get back.
That would be, you know, I can call him, too. When is he going to be back?
Ken's around.
Oh, he's around.
I talked to him yesterday, yeah.
All right. Why don't I send Ken an email just to get this started, and I'll see. And Tatiana, if you could send two sort of three-sentence descriptions, and,
yep.
And Sarah as well. And who is in touch with Peter Hammond?
Ed or I can both do that.
I'll be in London, so I might see him again.
Okay. I can write to everybody maybe.
But Tatiana and Peter, I don't know. I think they get along well now.
All right.
So, Tatiana, can you handle that one?
Yes.
The last thing I was going to ask is, Tatiana, would you be willing to be the symposium organizer for this?
Actually, I'd be glad to.
Great.
All right. Well, great.
And I'll help in any way that...
Would you like to co-chair?
Of course I would co-chair.
There you go. You're right back in the game then.
And I will share in the work.
Thanks. I think we can get this done, though, and I think it's actually very timely for many reasons.
Right.
And I think it's great because it shows a whole, I don't want to say face of CFAS that no one has seen yet.
Yeah, I think it's, and I would like to see something come out of the Peter Hammond stuff because
they
got a lot of money invested in that. So.
Right. And sometimes preparing for a symposium makes you do the work.
Yeah.
Gives you a deadline.
Yeah, and he's a busy guy.
Yep.
All right. In terms of progress, I think people have, in several areas anyway, have started to really move forward. And Jill sent out the progress on the 3D imaging, the neurobehavioral, and the brain imaging. And San Diego is well above their target, Los Angeles as well, and this is in the 3D facial imaging.
Mm-hmm.
Atlanta just got there because of a trip that Leah took down there, I think,
yep.
And really pumped up by about 20 or so images. I guess the Ukraine imaging project is not going to happen.
No, but remember, we've been talking with Phil, who maybe we'll talk about a little bit more, and we're
right.
Back in the game in South Africa.
I was going to ask you to update on that. I guess that's the one that needs to be discussed right now about.
Sure.
So you could fill us in on
I think Phil and I should probably both do it together. I can start. So So we've been trying to figure out how we can get 3D imaging into Phil May's cohort, and we had a whole series of emails, like I guess most of it since the last call, trying to figure out, you know, among the many cohorts that he has, which would be most appropriate. And I think we kind of circled around that the cohort that's also having brain imaging data would really be the most logical place to try to bring in 3D imaging. And we were trying to time this so that we can maximize the likelihood of getting images for Peter Hammond. So what we think, given our timeline, is that we can probably get about 30 individuals done. It would be 15 alcohol exposed, 15 not alcohol exposed. And the way we're going to have it worked out is PASS will be in place, and I can talk about that also on this call. And so there will be a camera permanently placed that will be part of the PASS project. And I spoke with Hein, and Hein said he would be absolutely fine with his staff, and I gave him a sense of the numbers. You know, I think we were talking about 6 to 8 individuals per month, and typically just I think it was 2 to 3 on a given day. And Hein said he was fine with his staff doing the images, so that alleviates the burden of trying to train anyone with Phil and Colleen. And so what we're going to fund is actually a person who will take the individuals who are participating in brain imaging and bring them over to where the 3D facial camera is, because that's really the missing piece. And so we've spoken with Colleen. I think this is the proposal that seemed to be clearly a preference to her staff, and so she's giving us an estimate of what this would cost. And I think those are the highlights, and I'll let Phil take it from there. Didn't I hear Phil? Wasn't Phil on the phone?
He was.
He had to leave early.
Oh, he had to leave? Yeah, that's right. He had to give a lecture.
Okay, so I'm still waiting for the estimated cost from Colleen, but I think everything is in place. What we're doing now is trying to get our dates with Hein, and we're looking at hopefully the second week of January. We've talked about December not being a good choice because of the holidays and because of break there. So we're looking at January and trying to see if we can do it the second week of January. So the camera would get over there, we get it trained, and it would be Leah and actually Mike Suddy from Peter Hammond's group. Peter can't go himself, but Mike just did, I think he said 300 people, both children and adults, in Chile. So I think that qualifies him in my book to assist in training people. And so he's agreed that, you know, if we paid for Mike to go, that he could go. And so I have to work out all the dates, but that's the week I'm waiting to hear from Hein first, if we could do it that week. So that would put everything, in good place for Phil, because Phil and Colleen couldn't start until the end of January anyway.
And then the other thing you do is you have a potential for, I think, now April in Minnesota with Jeff Wozniak.
Yes. And so I'll also add the PASS. So PASS, I think everyone knows, it's about 1,000 kids, and they would be seen twice. And so that has gotten all the approvals, and we're waiting just for Hein's final IRB. And for Jeff Wozniak, we were trying to do it in December, but he's still waiting for IRB approval, and I think we're a little anxious that first weekend of December he may or may not have it. So now we're looking at April, and that was he and I talked today, just given the weather. He's uncomfortable, and I can't really blame him for scheduling in the winter, because he thinks he'll get a lot of people canceling if there's any kind of bad weather. So it could be a real bust in terms of a trip. So, and the other thing we talked about was a couple different things. Was first of all widening the age range. So he had put in for his IRB 8 to 16, and he told me that he actually has some kids enrolled in studies that are quite a bit younger. So one of the things I wanted to ask on this call is what people would think if we lowered his range, maybe brought it more to like 5 or 6, and you know how many other sites are enrolling people that young. And he also has some subjects that he could potentially bring in that would be older than 16. And so I really want to get FAS. So I said I'd be really in favor of also kicking the age up, so giving us a wider age range. And that would give us more kids that we could schedule. And even if we have, you know, some level of no-show, it would still give us enough. And the other thing I talked with him about is that we wouldn't limit ourselves just to full-blown FAS, that we would also get kind of a swatch of alcohol exposure as well. And the other thing he commented on, there's not really anyone on the call who can comment on this, is he just brought up the gross deficiency. He sees it less, and he said Gene Hoime was in Minnesota, I guess this week, and he mentioned in his talk as well, and he was just saying because we're using that as inclusion criteria, either microcephaly or gross deficiency, that he was a little concerned that might eliminate some people that maybe shouldn't be eliminated, and I don't know if that's been a problem at any other site. So that's my... So questions and comments.
Well, the growth deficiency, you don't always see it in kids and the older kids, but you only need to be growth deficient at any point in your life.
Right.
And I don't know whether Jeff does that or not.
Okay. So you're thinking if he's focusing on current, then that's why he might be missing it.
If you focus on current, you're going to miss it. But if you go back, and one of the problems is kids in Minnesota are heavier than kids elsewhere in the country.
Oh, okay.
All right. The Finns have big heads, and the people in Minnesota have big heads and are heavy. So I'll have to I don't know about Gene. I'll have to ask Ken to ask Gene about that.
Okay.
All righty. So I think that the rush is that the timeline that we're running in with the spatial imaging is that Peter Hammond's contract with me runs out in July, and so we have to get him to do all this work before that, and mm-hmm. or get a commitment from him that he's going to do it, even if he doesn't get any more funds.
And that's why the 30 kids, because that's how many we could see between January and April, just so everyone understands.
The faster that we get them, the better.
Right, so, absolutely.
And the faster he gets the images, the better. So I'm hoping he got the ones from Atlanta that you got recently.
Those got sent, Leah, didn't they?
Got sent where?
To Peter.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Thanks, Leah. All right, the brain imaging data it seems to be L.A. is above its target, San Diego is above its target, South Africa is moving steadily ahead, and it's just a little bit short of its target. And so I am hopeful that everything will be moving along and that will be working.
Along those lines, Ed, and to anyone else on the call, are second scans coming soon?
I think second scans basically are supposed to be started, but they should. There should be kids that are coming in. They're not on. They're supposed to be on the Google Docs, but I don't think we have any data yet.
I think I can help you, and Suzanne's on there, too. I think that UCLA was supposed to start their second scans in October, and we're supposed to start ours in February. And I think South Africa is something like April.
Okay.
But Jill also mentioned in her email that there was something wrong with the Google Docs, if that's relevant here.
The Google Docs have been updated, but as of the time when I summarized it for the November 1st, LA should have 10 second scans at this point, and you're exactly right. San Diego's due to start in February and South Africa in April. It's in the summary part of the email that I sent you guys in the agenda because it wouldn't show up on the docs.
All righty.
Right.
And then the neurobehavioral and the demographics, San Diego is above its target. Los Angeles has kind of slowed down, and I'm not sure why, but there is very little demographic data that's been uploaded, and the assessment of neurobehavioral has been kind of slow in the last couple of months. And Suzanne, do you have any idea what's going on?
Hi, this is Jill again. She emailed like a second ago and said she had to go to prepare for subjects.
Okay. All right, so that's a real possibility. So, Jill, could you email Elizabeth and find out what's going on there? Because they've just kind of, they were right on target, and in the last few months they've just fallen way behind. And the problem without the demographic data, we have issues so that no one can use the data. So,
no problem.
This is Sarah. The demographic data is a real issue, but in terms of their, I don't know, since they're not on, I'm only sort of speaking for them, but they have almost met their goal for their FASD, or they met their goal for the FASD subjects and are very close on controls, very, very low on ADHD, and I'm wondering if they stopped recruiting for the FASD and are only focusing on ADHD, which is slower.
Yeah, but in the January meeting, Catherine Narr said she was going to make that a priority to get
right.
those ADHD
yeah.
kids. And if
yeah, no, I know. I'm just saying what might be the problem.
Yeah, but I mean, if we're not getting them, then we don't need to be paying people to test them.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
All right. At least that's my feeling these days. In Atlanta hasn't tested anyone in the last 3 months. On neurobehavioral, I know that Claire's having problems with a tester, but it leaves their neuroassessments at just a little bit over half of what they're supposed to have finished by the end of the year. So, Sarah, I hope you can get in touch with Claire and see if we can get this project back on track.
Yeah, I've talked to Claire in the last, well, by email in the last week or so, and one of her questions was, you know, she wants to hire somebody new to, she's had a series of tester problems, but she's wondering if we're really going to close data collection at the end of the year. And so I think that's a question that needs to be discussed at some point. Because if there's no, I mean, she to hire somebody just for 2 months doesn't really make a lot of sense. According to her, she has subjects in place because they've been seen on the, I think, maybe I'm wrong, but I think they've been seen for the facial imaging and they were seen for dysmorphology and they're just waiting to be tested.
Well, since it shouldn't cost us anything to roll over the testing for at least for Atlanta into the new year,
yeah.
Because if her problem is she doesn't have a tester,
yeah.
Then she's not paying anybody.
Right.
She has
yeah.
the funds to pay somebody.
I agree. And
so
I
think we should just let her pay someone and do it.
Okay. So that was the question that she wanted answered. So it sounds like it's okay. She's good to go to test into the new year.
It's either that or...
Yep. No, I agree.
Or I think we should take some money back and say we're closing the testing, and since you didn't have a neuropsychologist for the last 6 months, we're going to take that six-month salary back and reallocate it to someone who is doing testing. You know,
I would go for the former.
Six or one and a half dozen the other. It doesn't matter to me, but...
I think she has the kids, and they've been seen by dysmorphology and facial imaging, and it would serve lots of different projects to have them tested.
Right. What I don't want, though, is for Claire to come in later and say, well, I'm going to hire a new neuropsychologist. I need more money to do it because I think
yeah.
I gave Claire $30,000 to hire these neuropsychologists or something like that.
Okay, I'll send her an email and
I'm not
express those concerns.
I'm not sending that money out of the administrative corps so that it just doesn't get used or get used to pay for someone's travel somewhere. You know,
okay.
So I want the money back if it's not going to go toward testing. The New Mexico neurobehavioral has just gone up a little. I don't think it's any FASD kids. I think they're all controls, and there's no data being entered into the database. So if you could work on Phil to find out what's going on with both the New Mexico site and the Northern Plains site, I know they just got back, so they'll have data to enter in there. But even with the reallocated or the new targets that we've had for Phil, still well below half of what the new targets are. So you're going to have to give...
Well, have you been getting up... I wasn't included, but weren't you getting updates from him regularly about the progress according to those new goals? Have you gotten anything from him?
Yeah, I mean, what we get is the fact that he sent and did those three testings in the Northern Plains, and that's the progress. And then... when I saw him a month or two ago in Albuquerque, it was that they were testing kids, but most of the kids they were testing were not FAS, and they were having significant recruitment problems there. And, you know, we invested $60,000 of the admin corps money in New Mexico. So we need to... you know, if we're going to close data out, we're going to close data out, but then our goals will not have been met and will have fallen sharply on this neurobehavioral progress project. You know, I think the other ones were okay on, but the neurobehavioral, we are a little strapped for subjects at sites. South Africa's making progress, and they're getting the data in, so they're just the only data they're a little short now is on the demographic. You know, it's about we have like close to 600 kids tested in all the sites in neurobehavioral. There's data, you know, in the repository of about 600. And I don't know the breakdowns of all those kids or whether we can make the comparisons to ADHD or not. But, you know, I think that in these next few months, and even if they have to hold over into the new year for a few months, we got to try to get some of that data. I mean, it's all been paid for in terms of testers and things. So if it's not happening, then final year budgets, you know, need to come down significantly. And I've invested a lot of money from the admin core into this, and so it needs to be spent wisely on collecting that neurobehavioral data, or I need to get the money and get it back. I mean, we have other sites now that are looking for money. I know that Ken and Peggy Murray would like to send money to Korea. They met with some people in Croatia 2 weeks ago. And so there are other opportunities that we could open up, but right now, or keeping Peter Hammond on for another year. But, you know, there are simply no funds left in the admin core to do that because we invested it in New Mexico and in Atlanta. And yet I don't see any data coming out of those groups. And so, so far, it's we've got to get a bigger payoff for our buck here. So, all right, that's my. As you can tell, I'm very tired and exhausted. So, any other issues? Any progress, anyone, or any great findings, or any new publications anyone wants to tell us about?
I don't know if this is my last thing. I don't want to delay the call, but so just briefly, if we put on the agenda maybe for the next call. So when I was at NIAAA for their 40th anniversary, I was sitting next to Jennifer, and we were just talking, you know, when I hadn't just paid good enough attention that olfactory bulbs were reduced, in especially in animal models. And so she and I were talking, and I know somebody in San Diego has been looking at changes in smell. Do you know much about the literature? I mean, I tried to look around to see what I found, because we do a lot of work in olfaction and changes in the ability to, say, discriminate smell in neurodegeneration, so like in Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, Huntington's. And just do you have a sense of how much of that is being done in fetal alcohol syndrome?
Tatiana, I can talk about that a little bit. That's exactly what we're looking at. Clara Murphy, who's here, she does a lot of work in Alzheimer's.
Okay, I know her name. All right,
and
Jennifer
she's
didn't
the one
know
who's
okay.
Collaborating on that project. So we're doing.
Is she just doing it at your site?
Yeah.
What's she using? Do you know?
She uses a variety of measures. I think for this one, she's using an odor identification measure.
Is it like a threshold
measure,
or like is it are they these sniff and sticks? Is it more like sticks, or is it like a little booklet where you scratch and try to identify the smell?
I don't think it's the booklet, but I can find out the exact.
Do you know if she's looked at the data? I mean, does she see anything?
I don't think she's looked at the data.
Okay.
How much data do you think's been collected? I know that every child who comes in is supposed to be offered to be able to participate in that project.
That's a good question. Every child who comes in is offered the opportunity. I don't know how many kids have been tested.
It's really easy to do. I mean, we do it with demented people. Of course, you don't get much results then. I was just curious. It's just, it can be really culturally, depending on what you're using. I mean, it can be really problematic to go across cultures. But I was just curious what it looked like, because it's
right.
Seemed ideal, and I never paid attention, I guess didn't realize that the olfactory bulb was involved. And it's so logical to really push that, because it'd be great potentially as a tool for screening. That's why I'm asking.
Right. They're using measures that she's developed over a number of years for the San Diego community, so in terms of culturally sensitive. Of their San Diego culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it would be presumably fine for the U.S.
Yeah.
It's like evergreen trees. That may not work in all places.
Yeah, it doesn't work here.
That's why I bring it. Yeah, I mean, some places that will not work at all.
Right.
For you. Okay.
I can find out more details and let you know.
Yeah, I'd be really interested just to know if that's doing anything. I think it's not cheap to do olfactory testing, but it's really sensitive in PD, and that's you know, it's kind of the world I come from, and there it's a great predictor. Yeah, and Alzheimer's is very nice in there too. And we see it beautifully in Huntington's. I mean, pre-symptomatic people, it's there really early.
Yeah, I'd
curious.
Like to see how much data we have collected on that.
Because I'd actually recommend, if it looks promising, I would actually urge you to consider doing it at more sites. That's partly why I'm bringing it up, because it could be a really intriguing thing for preliminary data. That's partly why I'm bringing it up.
Yeah, I think it could be really good. I mean, the animal data would support that there may be something there as well. Jill just informed me that Teratology was in Louisville last year. Next year it's in San Diego. Ken is not going to be making that flight. Probably not. Not in a single day, anyway.
Are the dates exactly overlapping again?
I don't know. She didn't send me. Bill, do you know that? Did you find the dates?
Exactly overlapping.
Yeah, they typically are. All right, so.
They're both the 25th to the 29th.
We'll have to rethink that part. All righty. Okay, any other issues, Dale, Bill?
Well, just one thing about the Teratology meeting, which I've never been to. How big a presence is FASD in that meeting? I'm guessing it's not big enough to convince them to try to couple their meetings geographically with RSA?
They have in the past every few years.
Mm.
I think they are locked into particular sites now.
Mm-hmm.
And they got locked in because of a meeting that didn't do well at one point. And I think they had to make arrangements with this hotel. Now, I don't know if they're still doing that or not. And I don't know who decides where they meet. But, you know, we met together last time, I think, in Montreal. And that was a number of years ago. And when it happens, it's a great meeting. I don't think there's a tremendous amount of FAS at the Teratology meeting because it usually overlaps and most of the people are at the alcohol meeting.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing I would mention is that Bill and I are in the planning stages and organizing stages for an RSA symposium that's going to be FASD and epigenetics. So we hope that will fly. But I thought you guys would might be interested. And we just have to hope that these symposia don't get planned at the same times so that. I think that happened a little bit last year. It was hard to get to all the symposia.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit, I think. All righty. Michael, any comments, last comments?
No, I'm really pleased with the enrollment in the programs that are exceeding their targets. I think that's great. And even without Ken, I think that we can still put together a terrific symposium for RSA, and it won't in any way conflict, at least in subject, with an epigenetics symposium, so I think it could be very good.
All right. All righty. Well, thank you, everyone, and we will talk next month.
Okay.
And I think Jill's going to try to set up a new time for 2011.
You mean not on Fridays at 4?
I don't know. We'll
see. Oh, can I put a vote not to do Fridays at 4?
I'm not going. Fridays at 4 is all right with me, but it'll be 7 your time or 6 your time.
Well, no. Well, it's Fridays. I mean, Fridays at 1 your time, Fridays at 4. If we ever consider a new time, let's move away from Fridays at 4.
Okay.
Just a vote.
All right, Jill, you got that?
I'll send you an email about it, Jill.
All right, well, thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
All right, take care.
Bye. Take care. Bye.
Bye.